the feeling and need for acceptance and like, don't hate me for who I am, ingrained in me, and I think many other gay people, it's very strong.
The flag was hoisted before the world.
What does it mean, fight back?
We have a long fight ahead of us.
Here I am.
Here I am.
Here we are.
Here I am.
Here I am with Shai Davidai.
My guest today is a screenwriter, a Jewish educator, and the founder of Gay Zionist, a gay Jewish gay Zionist group in New York City. And here I am with Roni Tesler.
So nice to meet you.
So nice. And let me, before we start, I'll tell people the story of how we even met, because this is exactly what I mean when I say, when you start speaking up, amazing things start happening. So we basically met on the street. You recognized me, and you said, I'm not crazy, I'm not a stalker, you know, and I'm not gonna hurt you, which is, by the way, you know, as someone who, it's good to hear that, like, it's funny, but like, I never thought in my life that I would be in a position where I would want to hear that from someone when I just meet, because the fact that people even recognize my face is weird. And then we just started talking about how your life has been in New York City. You were there with a friend.
Yeah, my roommate.
Oh, your roommate. Yeah. And you started talking about how your reaction to everything. And I realized, whoa, I'm speaking with an organizer, an activist, who may not even realize that he's an activist.
Mm-hmm.
And I literally said, if you set up an Instagram page, I'm having you on my podcast.
And I set up an Instagram page.
And here we are. So yeah. I'm really, really excited to delve into this. But the first question that I ask every guest on this show is, Roni, what kind of a Jew are you?
Kind of a Jew am I? I am a gay Jew. I should have watched previous episodes.
No, you should have. I love it.
What kind of a Jew am I? I am a Jew that believes in truth, that believes in the sovereignty of Jewish people in an indigenous homeland. I am a Jew who believes in showing people how accessible Judaism can be in all of the ways. Like I said, I being a gay Jew it's a quality and a title that I've had to ease into comfort, because being gay was a process, you know, coming out from an Orthodox family and all that.
Yeah, so we'll get into that, but I want to say another thing. You are a Jew that walks around with Herzl Theodor Herzl's The Jewish State. You want to hold it up for a second?
Yeah, sure.
You know, you're the only other person that I've met this year, other than me, who, you know, has been reading Herzl's The Jewish State.
Yeah, it's important. It's actually incredible how many things are relevant in this book to today. Like, nothing has changed.
Hmm. What do you find is like the number one thing that's like eye opening from this book?
There was a paragraph, if I can read a little bit.
Oh yeah, of course.
I mean,
I love this, because like people would be like, oh, did you plan that?
No.
Did you talk about this before? So I was like, hell no, we did not.
Right. But, you know. Right. I think it's incredible for someone to have a dream like this and to believe in a concept that is hard to fathom and then materializes. But this piece that he wrote, for a little period, they manage to tolerate us, and then their hostility breaks out again and again. The world is provoked somehow by our prosperity, because it has for many centuries been accustomed to consider us as the most contemptible among the poverty-stricken. Thus, whether we like it or not, we are now and shall henceforth remain a historic group with unmistakable characteristics common to us all. We are one people. Our enemies have made us one without our consent, as repeatedly happens in history. Distress binds us together, and thus united, we suddenly discover our strength. And this is the 19th century.
Yeah, in 1894, I believe, right?
Yeah.
Why is this paragraph? Why does this speak to you so much?
It speaks to me because the only way I've gotten through the last year is through community. I am on WhatsApp groups with other gay Jews in Berlin, in England. I've met people in non-Jewish Zionists in Vienna, in Italy. The only way I've gotten through this is by other people, through other people holding each other up. It's been a horrible year. I feel like I'm living in a fog. And yeah, I felt the need to hibernate and hide a little bit, but just be with people who understand and can get it and to hold each other. And I mean, we can talk about it a little later, but you know, the group that I started, Gay Zionists, is all about that. I mean, the most important part is just that we have each other and we can message each other. I saw this on the street today. This person wrote me this horrible comment. Or another thing we can talk about, when Eurovision happened, we all were just like, what, the best day of my life last year. So yeah, the support.
We'll delve into all of that. Sure. But one thing I want to describe to people that are listening on Apple podcasts, on Spotify, and other platforms, and are not watching on YouTube. You should, if you're not watching on YouTube, you should go, because so I'll describe, you know, so you're wearing like white sneakers, white Vans, light blue jeans, and then a tank top, I would say, like it says Little Miss Zionist with those two Israeli flags.
Yeah.
Not how I would imagine a yeshiva boy.
For sure.
So tell me how you got to where you are now.
Sure. So I grew up in Maryland, in Potomac, Maryland. My father was the rabbi of the synagogue where I grew up.
An Orthodox rabbi, an Orthodox synagogue.
Mm-hmm. A very open-minded, you know, a very inclusive rabbi. He's an incredible guy, allowing everyone to feel welcomed in the community. I went to Jewish day school my whole life. I lived in Israel for 6 months during second and ninth grade. And then I went to yeshiva afterwards. So I went to study at Mevaser Tzion. Shout out to any of the other Mevaser people listening. I don't know.
Were you out as gay back then?
I came out in college. I came out in college, and part of the reason I moved to New York City was I craved and needed anonymity as a rabbi's son, and so I needed to disappear a little bit. So it's funny now that I'm reemerging, right? There's like this period of like,
if you need to disappear, being on my podcast may not be the right place.
That's what I mean. It's in a way. You know, I'm someone I think is a lot of people. I don't want to generalize about gay people, but the feeling and need for acceptance and like, don't hate me for who I am, it's very strong. And so I'm finding the need to come out all over again in a very different way as a Jewish person, as a Zionist, as someone who believes in the right for Jews to live in Israel. I mean, like, terms that shouldn't be controversial, but have been made controversial. And so I needed to disappear a little bit. In the way of just moving to a bigger city where people didn't know me, and I've created my own community identity, and you know, and in that way too, now that I'm a Jewish educator, I have, you know, over 20 students I meet with a week from B'nai Mitzvah and Torah and Jewish history. I get to reclaim Judaism in a way for how I want, and also be a role model to other people and show how, teach them how I would have wanted to be taught back then.
Yeah. One of my new friends since October 7 is Shmuley Schwartz, who he's a observant Jew and gay man. And he told me a story about the first ever time that he publicly admitted his sexual orientation. Mm. And he said he was in Israel. And it was the first time that he saw a pride flag with the Magen David.
Wow.
And he freaked out. And he ran to the person that was holding it and said, can I just take a picture with your flag?
Yeah.
And, you know, and when he told me that, we even had like a long conversation about that. But it's like, as a gay Jewish man, you basically have two coming outs, right? Because for you, you don't wear a yarmulke. You're not like, you can quote unquote pass,
yes,
as non-Jew. And if you wanted, you can quote unquote pass as not gay.
Yes.
And in some way, you have been forced to come out again. Like, I didn't use to walk around with my Magen David. Mm-hmm. My Jewish identity is my identity and no one else's business. Once they made it my everyone else's business, I came out as like a Zionist,
yeah,
as a Jew, as like in your face Jew.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, coming out as gay, I mean, it's very nerve-wracking in the beginning, at least for me. Even using, I couldn't even speak the word gay. I couldn't even say that word. Even now, hearing that people might say, I mean, I feel it. I feel the twinge of fear and worry. And now, I was at a bar with some Israeli friends last week. Met these, I don't know, nice guys from Chicago. And they're like, oh, what's your Instagram? And I felt the same fear. You're going to go to my Instagram page. You're going to see my Jewish, my Israeli flag and pride flag that's pinned to the top. That's very important to me. You're going to see the things I've written and reactions I've had to the events of the last year. And I'm afraid. I'm afraid that they're not going to like me. And of course, like, then they're not the right people and they shouldn't be your friends, etc. But there is a very strong need for acceptance and love and not to be ostracized. That is ingrained in me and I think many other gay people. So it's a very, very similar feeling.
Yeah. So let's talk about, we'll talk about all of your identities. I do want to talk about your Jewish educator.
Sure.
Jewish educator identity.
Sure.
So what did you do? Tell me.
So what do? I teach, I mean, when I first moved to the city, I taught.
When was this?
I don't know when I got kind of old. I don't think I'm old, but kind of old. I moved to the city in 2009.
Okay.
Yeah.
15 years ago.
Oh God. almost November 1st. Yeah. It's my anniversary. And I started teaching B'nai Mitzvah because I did it during college. It's great. I love working with kids. It's really fun.
What do you teach them?
I mean, how to read Torah, like Eich Likro Torah, how to read Torah, how to chant the Torah, you know, how to teach them for their Dvar Torah, the Tefillot, the prayers. But also it's kind of morphed into other students who are younger who don't have any other education when it comes to being Jewish. So Hebrew, this past year was very big on Israeli history. I told my kids, I said, you got to know this history. You have to know it. And in the past, I was like, I don't want to know. Like, no, you need to know this right now. You need to know it. You need to know the maps. Why is that map important? Why is 48 important? Why is 67? What changes between these? They have to know it right now. And so that's been very, very important to me as well.
At what age do you think we should start learning?
I mean, I think, yeah, I also officiate B'nai Mitzvah. So it's very important. When I say that, I say like, why?
What do you mean officiate B'nai Mitzvah?
Like I'm their quote unquote rabbi. I won't pretend to be a rabbi, but I officiate the service, you mm-hmm. know. And it's important that even when I'm talking and explaining the service, why are we facing east? Why are we doing that? Mm. Like, oh, right. Because Israel has been in our thoughts and prayers for millennia. That's why. Or little things like that that people don't even realize are ingrained in Judaism and when it comes to Israel. So it's important for me even. So if they're really young, I explain the importance of that and why. But as far as, I mean, it depends on a kid's appetite for history. Because sometimes it can be a little boring. But I guess I have a student who is, I think 11 years old, was really into it last year. Yeah.
But you're not the typical teacher of Nei Mitzvot. Like,
no.
What's the reaction when sure. you come and you...
Yeah, I mean, it's on purpose, you know? I want to show up and say that you can be openly gay, a Jewish educator. You can be all these things. I think for the longest time I had to choose, am I going to be religious? Am I going to be not religious? Am I going to be gay? Am I going to be Jewish? And like to be able to blend it without shame is a really liberating feeling.
Do you have a favorite like parasha that you teach them?
A favorite parsha I teach them? Good question. Well, of course, it always depends on when their B'nai Mitzvah is, when it falls.
You don't get to choose when they're born.
Exactly. You don't really get to choose when you're born. So,
but like, do you have like a student that tells you like, oh, I'm born in this, and you're like, yes, lech lecha.
Sure. I mean, the wonderful thing about being Jewish is being able to find connection with everyday objects and your Judaism. I like to have this game where I put a bunch of random things in a bag. Each one of my kids will take like a item out and I'm like, okay, make a Dvar Torah about this. Like that's the beauty of Judaism. Like you can take whatever it is and find a connection between this random object and the Torah. And like, that is so much of what Judaism is. It's finding connection in every single moment of our lives to the Torah, to something deeper,
So I'm going to put you on the spot.
Okay.
Right now.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Make a Dvartora about this, about our conversation.
About this? Sure. Sure. Absolutely. I will. I'm going to preface this. I've thought about this in the past, but so it's not like totally spontaneous, but I mean, it relates very much so. I went to a Shavuot at the JCC, Shavuot Learning. It was like a few days after the really horrible protest outside of the Nova Festival. It was really shocking, really sickening. And I saw a line of Jews around the block for Shavuot. Like they were like coming to learn. And I went to a talk that night about anivut, humility, anavut.
Anava.
And about Moshe and how he's the most humble person in the Torah, and it talks about that, and how, you know, so many times he says to God, like, I'm not the right guy, right? Like, I can't speak well, they're not going to believe me, etc. And then, you know, he is able to do it, and he puts aside all of his reservations. And I looked at the text, and I like kind of like shuddered a little bit, because what's the thing that gets him to become a leader, to become an activist, to become someone who speaks up for the Jewish people? What's the thing in the Torah? I don't know if you know what happens next.
It's funny. I have my idea. I don't know if it's the right idea. When he sees the Egyptian beating.
So that's before. Oh. That's where he runs away. He runs away to Midian, right? And sees the burning bush. And then he's at the burning bush. Like, so then what happens? God says, look, your brother is coming to greet you. It is when we see other people in our community to help us that we stop doubting ourselves and we become people who believe in ourselves and what we can do and what we can accomplish. And that is the theme of this year. It is, I'm only able to be brave, quote unquote, and posting on social media, which is now brave because sure, I've lost followers. Sure. I'm sure people don't want to talk to me. People have ignored me in public. I'm only that because of other people around me. Yeah. And I think about that a lot. Like Moshe is not, he doesn't suddenly believe in himself. It's because he sees his brother and his brother is there with him to guide him and hold his hand.
And, you know, and help him.
And help him. Help him. Like and
he,
so
he did a lot of the speaking for him.
And he did a lot of the speaking. And so the fact that like I'm here in front with you, like you give people strength, right? Seeing you doing what you're doing.
That is so funny because I tell a lot of people, when, especially when I'm like in rallies and marches, I get my strength from people.
Yeah.
All I do is get strength from people that have such strength to give me, keep hold that on and then give it, pass it on to someone else that needs it.
Absolutely.
I'm actually not the person or where the strength originates from, but I think I'm really good at like asking for it from other people. You know, give me a hug when I need it and then giving someone else a hug when they need it.
Absolutely. Yeah. It is. And it's Jews and non-Jews. I've gotten so much strength from non-Jewish people, of non-Jewish friends of mine who have checked in on me, who continue to check in on me, who like, oh, these are my friends. These are the people who can hold awareness, hold sensitivity for everyone, can understand the pain I'm feeling as a Jewish person. Those people have got me through the year.
So we go from Roni, the Jewish educator. I want to know, where was Roni the Jewish? How did October 7 hit Roni the Jewish educator? But also, how did October 7 hit Roni the Jewish gay man?
I woke up on October 7th. I saw the news like everyone. And the thing that has guided me most out of this whole process, I guess my mindset, was when I would see other, I was in shock, disbelief. I saw other Jewish people posting about it. And they post about it, their horror, but what did they say? It always started with, I don't support Netanyahu. I'm against the occupation. But this is really horrible. I couldn't believe we were giving qualifiers and caveats to what was happening. I couldn't believe that Jewish people had to feel like they needed to feel like they had to somehow explain their horror or justify their shock and pain and outrage.
They felt like we all felt like we had to empty our pockets out.
Sure. That expression, empty our pockets out, be the right kind of person. Don't hate. I careful. Like, don't worry. I don't like that guy. Even if you do like Netanyahu, that doesn't justify. Like, it is so guided everything that I've done. And I think actually about, you know, when it says in Pirkei Avot, when Rav Hillel says, you know, im eina ni li mili, if I'm not for myself, who will be for me? And then, of course, if I'm only for myself, what am I? I think American Jews, maybe diaspora Jews in general, we have a real issue with the first one, im eina ni li mili. And I think there's a lack of, I mean, of obviously we have to, the whole point of Judaism is so incredible because we dip wine on Pesach for Egyptians that murdered us and enslaved us. I mean, that is who we are. But we're here. We're im eina ni li mili. That's number one right now. And I've seen so many people feel like every time they post or every time they make a comment, feel the need to do something that somehow, I'm like over it. If you know who I am, you know I'm a good person, you know I'm a kind person, you know I don't want war to happen ever. You know I don't want innocent people dying ever. I'm not going to feel like I need to justify my support and love for Israel and my own people. It really shook me that day and has guided me. And so,
why do you think that's the case? Why do you think so many American Jews feel that need to empty their pockets?
I think they're so afraid of being hated. I think they're so afraid of being vilified. And no one wants to be vilified, and especially in social media. I think it's exacerbated the issue of being liked. And right, we do things to get that rush of acceptance and care. So, but it's, you're right. Do other minorities feel that way? I don't know. But it was a big wake-up call that day. Mm-hmm. And it's guided everything that I have done and continue to do. And I'm like, I need to focus on me right now and my own people right now.
And so you started focusing on you.
And so I started focusing on me. Exactly. That's right. When you ask about how it relates to me as gay Roni, I mean, I guess similarly, you know, in the days after that, I never really experienced a lot of anti-Semitism in the gay community. I saw once, maybe twice, someone said no Zionists on a dating profile or something. Of course, it says like, love all cultures, love learning, no Zionists. It's like, it's funny in a way. But after that, you know, I would go out dancing. I love dancing. I love going out with my friends. There's one venue in particular. It's not a gay venue, but they have a lot of gay events, queer events. And on every single bathroom stall on the front, it said, ceasefire now. And then a QR code to help Palestinian children. To be clear, I have donated to help Palestinian children. Like, I have no problem with helping Palestinian children because this war should end. But I was with, by the way, a friend of mine whose cousins were hostages and whose aunt was murdered and his uncle is still a hostage right now. And to see a community that doesn't say anything about any other, I don't know, issue in the way that they are about Israel on every single door, I was very upset. And I wrote them to explain, you know, the issue. And then,
so just crystallize that issue. Like, was the issue the fact that it said ceasefire now? Or was the issue the fact that it says ceasefire now, but there was no, like, any representation for the hostages?
Exactly. Yeah. You go for it, ceasefire now. There are also, I forget how many hostages there were then, you know, who weren't released yet. Weren't released yet. Weren't freed yet. Weren't killed. But yeah, also, like, I've got hostage posters I can send you if you want to. Mm-hmm. You know, this is a very complicated issue and people look at this in a very binary way. And then throughout the time, you know, I was again actually at the same venue in the bathroom and on the wall it says glory to Al-Qassam, # Martyrs Brigade. And I was in the bathroom and I left and everyone's dancing. There's a DJ. I'm thinking, what other group of people would tolerate this?
Yeah. And for people who don't know, Al-Qassam is the military wing of Hamas. Those are the terrorists that enacted the October 7th massacre.
Yeah.
So you're in a bathroom in New York City, dancing, having fun. And it basically said, glory to the terrorists that massacred the 1,200 Jews.
Exactly. And actually, before I went in, some people were like, ooh, careful, the bathroom's a little bit iffy. So, okay.
But that's like par for the course in like clubs in New York City.
Yeah, so, but no one is saying death to any other minority in a bathroom in New York City. It's not happening. What other bathroom in New York City is like, kill all the blank or glory to the KKK, whatever you want to call it. And the reaction was careful. And we're just supposed to like, eh, whatever. It's like bad, but don't worry about it. Like, I refuse to take that anymore. We should all be upset. And also, like, don't be, and I posted about it. Don't apologize to me. You should be upset about it. Don't worry about my feelings. You should be as upset about as I am right now.
Right. Like, if someone said, if someone wrote the name of the terrorist that shot up the Pulse Club in Miami, right? Mm. And would have said, glory to the smarter. You know, you'd be like, this is horrific and horrible. And we not only do we not accept that, but we will look at that, you know, our closed caption TVs to see who was at the restroom at the time and find out who's spreading hate in our business.
Yeah, that's right. And so, look, I haven't been back in a while. I don't know if they covered up or not, but clearly it was up long enough for someone else to write, when are they going to paint over this? Someone else wrote that on the on the thing. Yeah. So yeah, as a gay Jew, you know, other ass people write me like, the Israeli flag is disgusting because, you know, my Instagram is linked to it. Or I was just traveling. I had a really wonderful time in Europe this summer. And so one person wrote me, I didn't know him. He said, as a Jew, I'm ashamed that you're a fellow Jew. And then another person, a different person wrote me, we were right about you. And I was like, what does that mean? And then he sent me a train emoji, like cattle car in Austria.
so basically Hitler was right about
me. Yeah, exactly. Hitler was right about me. And I, yeah. So as a gay Jew, it's a weird place to be in. Because again, we escaped to gay communities, from Jewish communities, a lot of us, to find acceptance. And now we are coming out in gay communities and being ostracized by the people we escaped to, by the communities we escaped to.
So what was your reaction? What did you end up doing?
With what?
With gay Zionists.
Ah, so gay Zionists started from a mixture of things. One, it was seeing that and the buildup of, I refuse to tolerate this. Two, Eden Golan, if you're listening, Eurovision was incredible. If a 20-year-old girl can walk out, woman can walk on stage with thousands of people giving her the finger, screaming at her, telling her how horrible she is with an Israeli flag, I can
and
walk
kick her, ass.
And kick ass. And, get, and it was amazing.
And make it to top five.
And should have won. I mean, you saw the breakdown of the points and everything. I mean, clearly, so it's in my mind, she already won. In my mind, it was a win. And it was an incredible day to see the world. Like, the world doesn't hate us. Like, that's all we ask for. Just don't hate us. I can walk around New York City and go to a club and do that. I mean, it's this thing. It's like people giving each other power and people giving each other courage. So it was that, and then it was Yom Ha'atzmaut. No gay community was
Yom Ha'atzmaut in Israel's Independence Day.
Yeah, Israel's Independence Day. No one was doing anything in the city for queer Jews, gay Jews. So my roommate and I, we hosted a party. 80 people came. I had my friend who's.
So who is this party for? Tell me about the party.
So it was for gay Jews, queer Jews, whoever wanted to come. Just a place to be together. Again, just a space. Just give us a space to be together. We don't really want or need much. And it was amazing and incredible. And so I started this, you know, WhatsApp group, this digital community for support, advocacy, education, and events. So, you know, the most important part is support. We write each other and like, I saw this, I need help, whatever it is. Events, anything that we're going to, but also, you know, I've gotten psychologists come to speak to us about pinkwashing and validate our, you know, worst nightmares. I had my friend who is the head of Jewish studies at Penn gave a lecture on Zionism and the history of Israel. You know, Israeli walking food tours, whatever else it might be. You know, I'm creating, we need to know our history. We need to feel supported. We need to be educated. And then also advocacy. You know, the thing I did for Pride was I bought 75 Sharpies I gave them out and I said, when all of us are out in the community and dancing, when you see hate speech, you cross it off and you write something positive. And it was, this little pen was like power again. I mean, it was like, we could be in a space and reclaim it and say, how dare you write glory to Al-Qassam? I'm going to cross this off, how horrible it is. Mm. Little things that we can do here and there. It's just, it's I don't know, they're close to 100 people in it now. So.
And this is only in New York City.
This is only in New York City, but, you know, I'm now in gay WhatsApp groups in London and in Berlin. And when I was in Berlin, you know, I met people from it, or I met people in London who were there. And the connection between people is incredible and something that didn't exist a year ago.
Are there these kind of groups, you know, sprouting up in other places?
Other countries?
Yeah, other cities, other countries.
They must be. I'm sure they are. If you're listening to this, and you are, please reach out to me, because my mission, my big goal is at the Pride this June to have a queer Zionist Congress, a la Theodor Herzl, to have Jews and non-Jews come to Israel, which, again, they already do, but with more intention, to have a global conference where people can come together, affirm the right of Jews to live in Israel and Israel as a democracy to exist as it is. And so I want, you know, there were 17 countries at the original Zionist Congress in 1897. I want 17 countries. There were, I think, 200.
At least 17 countries.
There were 208 delegates. Please give me more than 208 people. That'll be wonderful. But look at all the incredible gay influencers and leaders that we have now in the world. Chen Mazig's doing amazing work. You know, I don't know. There's so many other people right now who are speaking up. And so we need to be there and find the solidarity together. Again, the community is helping all of us survive this horrible time.
Yeah. So gay Jews of the world unite.
Gay Jews of the world unite. Yeah.
I actually think it's an...
And non-Jews.
And non-Jews, and non-Jews, right. And not, what I call them angels, NJAs, non-Jewish allies. Because Israel is, even if it's, you don't do it out of moral reasons, even if you don't do it out of, this is just the right thing to do, do it out of self-interest. Like, if you are a... gay man, lesbian woman, bi, trans, queer, even if you're not Jewish, a city, one of the most LGBTQ friendly cities in the world is under attack. You want to make sure that they are taking some of your space away. You want to make sure, claim that space, you know, fight for that space. And I think some, you know, like Daniel Ryan Spalding, you know, has been doing that. It's like, he's not Jewish, but he knows right from wrong. And he knows that if Hamas gets its way, he can't go and have gay pride in Tel Aviv.
Yeah, Daniel's amazing. Daniel's incredible. And I wrote about this also, how gays need to come out of the closet again. We have been accustomed, because we finally found community. And I think there's a fear in speaking out and being hated. That fear is so strong. We need to protect the only democracy in the Middle East that helps gay people. I always say, Jewish people, Israel, has done more for queer Palestinians than queers for Palestine ever has. Ever. And it is absurd that we even have to have this conversation. But the term Zionism has been misappropriated on purpose. And it's like, it's taking work, it's changing definitions of things because it fits a narrative is so, just from a lack of, forget the Jewish, it's just, the truth of the, what did you stand up for? Truth. You stand up for equality and all of that, just like you said. And so we need to be standing up for the democracy that helps gay people everywhere.
So in your vision, like in your, if you will, it is no dream.
Exactly.
what does this first queer Zionist Congress look like?
Sure.
And how can I help?
Yeah. Oh my God. You're amazing. Thank you. Yeah. The truth is, I think the biggest obstacle is like getting people there and places to stay. So like, you know, subsidized flights, you know, it's in a way birthright is amazing and incredible. Herzl didn't create Israel with Jews alone. If anything, the Jews were like, we're finally cool in Munich. Like, we don't want you. Like, they're accepting us. Like, go somewhere else. Right. He needed the non-Jewish people to help him. This is a side thing. I think Jewish people should be much more like, please convert to Judaism, because we are suffering because of our numbers right now. Like, it's very important. We need the help. We need the help. We can do it ourselves. I know, but like, it's much better.
I know. I disagree. You think so? I disagree. I see it as one of the most exclusive clubs in the world, uh-huh, with a 2-year waiting list and with quite the request. There's a few hoops you need to jump through, especially if you're a man.
Yeah.
And because we want to make sure that you're really in it, you know,
yes,
that you're ride or die, that you're not just like in it for the gefilte fish. Or yeah. Whatever.
Well, I don't know if anyone's in it for the gefilte fish. I mean, I am. I don't mind it. Sure. But I guess we need the help. We need the help. And so the Queer Zionist Congress is gay Jews and non-Jews. And I've spoken to a bunch of non-Jewish people who go, I'll go. Because they're interested. They want to see it. See it for yourself. Stop reading. Just, you know, don't read an Instagram carousel slide. Like, just go to the place. Talk to people.
I'll be honest. I'm not queer, and I'll go yeah to support.
Oh,
and hear. Yeah. And hear the issues.
Right.
Hear what's on people's minds.
Exactly. So, I think it's people from all as many countries as we can getting together to affirm, as basic as it is, the right of Jewish people to live in Israel. I would say also, you know, to make sure that we are standing up for our, you know, gay family in Israel and advocating for, you know, gay people within Israel, but also very clearly combating anti-Semitism within the gay community and gay spaces around the world, which is now an issue and will not go away anytime soon. This is something that, you know, I would need help getting people to Israel and like hotels, having people there. So Birthright does an amazing job for Jewish people who are already Jewish, who've never been to Israel. But like, we now need an organization who can help get queer Jews and non-Jews to Eretz Israel, to Israel, to see it for themselves. And I'm excited about it. I think it's necessary right now. And, you know, I so much, there's one aspect, there's one part of fighting against something, like when you fight against, well, for example, someone says what anti-Zionism is and you're like fighting them and disagreeing with them and arguing, just ignore them and just promote what you know Israel is. Just promote what you know Zionism is.
Yeah.
And I think it's very important and necessary at this moment.
Right. I think that has been my modus operandi, because when you are responding to someone else's baseless accusations,
yeah,
you're letting them control the narrative. You're letting them lead the dance.
Absolutely.
They're telling you where they want to go. And it's almost like they are detracting us from the mission. From
exactly.
The prize.
Right. You know, it's a distraction.
Like, you want to call it a genocide? Well, I want to call you stupid because you don't know how words work.
Exactly.
And you cannot change words just because you have, you know, a certain point you want to make. Find the words you want to make. And you know what? You can, when people call it a humanitarian crisis, you're absolutely right. When people call it mass tragedy, absolutely right. When people talk about killed babies, you're absolutely right. Those are facts that I cannot refute. But when you people talk about murdered babies, that's where I draw the line, because murder requires intention.
Right.
You can't just throw in a word that means something else entirely and lead that dance there. So yeah, I will call people out on their bullshit, but most of my focus will be on this, what you and I are doing.
Right.
I'm not going to let them lead the conversation.
Also, the conversation is usually not in good faith. They don't actually want to argue with you or have a conversation with you. It's really important, I've learned now, it takes so much energy, because again, all these people, they have the conversation with her and then they go to sleep at night and then they can think about so many other things. This is like, how dare I discuss or refute any other minority's, I don't know, either lived experience or history in a way. I would never have the gall to do such a thing, ever.
Yeah.
And now all of these non-Jewish people have the audacity to like lecture me, teach me, tell me, and it's very insulting. And so I just, it's honestly, a lot of these conversations are not worth it. Like, okay, man, cool.
As I told you before we started recording, that a few nights ago I ran into Mark Ruffalo, and, you know, he has 28 million followers that gobble up his arguments. And I believe he's a good guy. I believe that he believes he's a good guy. I think he's also in the algorithm. and has been in the algorithm for so long that he can't even see that he's in the algorithm. Not to say that I'm not in a algorithm, but the difference is, and this is what I told him, the difference between him and I is that I have a horse in that race and he doesn't.
Absolutely.
And that's why I actually almost never criticize Palestinians who take a very extreme position, unless they're in favor of violence and they're promoting violence. But when they take a very extreme position, I understand they are feeling as much pain as I am, or maybe even more.
Mm-hmm.
They have a horse in the race. The outcomes of what happened will affect them, their siblings, their cousins, their mothers, their fathers, their grandchildren, the same as they would affect me, my siblings, my cousins, my mother, my father, my grandfather, my niece and nephew.
Absolutely.
Mark Ruffalo has no horse in this race. He has no skin in this race. Bella Hadid, despite claiming to be the richest Palestinian, the richest refugee in history, right? And you know, she has no horse in this race. Candace, whatever her name is, Owens, she has no horse.
I don't even want to mention these people because acknowledging them even gives them power in that way.
No, I
hear you.
I like mentioning the names of people who are or engage are anti-Semitic or engage in anti-Semitism, mm-hmm. because I think it's important that the world keeps a record.
Mm.
So that 20 years from now, they can't come and say, oh, we didn't know.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess this is important for me to make while I'm on here. I believe the majority of people are really good people.
Yes.
I believe the majority of people are good people.
And I've gotten flack for saying that. You know, but I agree. And the majority of people, both also the majority of Palestinians.
Yes.
Are deeply good people that all they want is to be home and safe and with their kids, just like most Israelis, Jewish and non-Jewish Israelis.
We live in a time of this phone right now. I often will look at my phone and look at all the craziness on it. I'll put it down. I'll go, I'm safe right now. I'm okay. And it's the perceived threat and the actual threat. And, you know, the most people I've met in Europe, around, everyone is like, when I tell them, again, I'm so nervous to even say my family is, I don't, you know, I go on a date with someone. I don't know, like, how they're going to think or what. I mean, I get nervous. Oh, my gosh, how is it? Man, I could totally, wow, I hear you. I can't help. Most people are good people. Most people are nice people. The phone wants us to think that it's this hard, and it is. Look, you're on college campuses, so I can't even comment. I bow to you because it looks horrendous. But in the grand scheme of things, most of the people I think are good people who want peace for everyone in the world. And everything else is such distractions to get us to hate each other. And I just wish we like normalized and amplified voices of like those people. I really believe it's a majority.
I agree. I completely agree. I think the problem becomes when the issue becomes a problem when most people, the good people, stay silent.
Sure.
And the not good evil, the actors in bad faith are so loud and so violent, and the good majority says, this too shall pass. I was speaking with some friends, who very close friends, who there's a professor, one of them is a professor, and there's a professor on their campus. And that professor has glorified October 7th. And he was suspended. Now he's back to teaching.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, how could this be? We don't understand. How could this be that this person who glorified October 7th is back to teaching? And I said, you know, I don't mean to offend you. I don't want to hurt you. But it's not that shocking. That person is back to teaching because you are not speaking up.
Mm.
Because the university, you know, they know that if they fire him, they'll face, you know, complications. But they don't know that there are thousands of professors who will stand by the university's side. So I believe that was the same dynamic in the 1930s in Germany. Most Germans were good people. How could it be that, you know, you had Kristallnacht Well, because most Germans, when they saw them coming for the Jews, they locked their doors and rather than step out and said, wait, we're with them, not you.
Yeah, you make a great point. And it's why I was having this, I thought that gay people need to come out of the closet. And, you know, I love being a moderate. I mean, I think moderation is very cool, very sexy. You know, like extremes always take up the air in all the room. It's always the bad kid who ruins it for everyone in the class. And like, make moderation cool and fun. And I want fierce moderates and passionate, sexy moderates. Like, it's not, because who wants to? Yeah.
I've been thinking, you know, when you make a podcast, you think about what is like the tagline of the episode.
Sure.
And I think for this one, it could be make moderation sexy.
Sure. Right?
Make moderation sexy again.
But also the news isn't into that. This whole time too has totally made me realize, oh, the news is actually run by very fallible humans who also are amplifying very extreme points of view that exist. It's not that it doesn't exist and everyone should be safe and need to take precautions, but, you know,
Look, the news have become, the national media news have become clickbait. You know, CNN is clickbait news network. NBC is national broadcasting clickbait. It's all about how can we get you to stay on our platform, if it's TV, if it's radio, if it's social media, for 10 more seconds, because then the advertisements come and that's how we get paid. So they're not going to tell you the stories that are of moderates. We're not going to amplify the moderate voices. We're going to amplify Marjorie Taylor Greene calling, you know, space laser Jews. And we're going to amplify AOC, Rashida Tlaib, and Ilhan Omar, you know, crying about the Iron Dome, the defense system being funded, you know, crying about the fact that Israel has a right to exist. So they're going to amplify that because that's going to give them money, and completely forget that 85-90% of decent Americans don't lie in those extremes.
Whenever that something like that happens and I can feel like an anger, I go, they're doing it on purpose. They want you to get angry. They want you to get mad right now. And to understand truly, like, when am I being dramatic? When can I, like, Roni, it's okay. But also understanding, when is it a very real threat and we need to take action, you know, against my alma mater, University of Maryland, when they were going to have this protest on October 7th. You know, it's a horrible reality that we had to contend with, but that the university did.
So probably this episode will air after October 7th.
Mm.
But I still want to know, what are your plans for October 7th?
So,
what are you planning to do?
In this whole time, there's another group that was organized called Shalom Dykes, because the Dyke March this year, their theme was genocide, because as one does during Pride, you have a theme.
Right. And the lesbian community has had it really hard, you know, since like 2017, I believe, the Dyke March in Chicago, where they said basically no Zionists.
That's right.
You know, that's how the organization Zionists came about, which is like progressive Zionist organization. So gay Zionists
and Shalom Dykes. That's right. We're coming together. We're going to we're creating an event on October 6th. The idea right now is that I don't like making people do anything. I want people to have choice and freedom in whatever it is. So I think there are very different ways in which we mourn. And so we want to have different areas and stations that people can experience or go to if they want to write, if they want to create something, if they want to watch testimonials, if they want to pray. I mean, so we're hoping to create an event for queer Jews, in the city. And people can come and mourn as they need. I mean, we were even thinking about like a rage room, like just like a area where people to just process their anger. They're an amazing group of people, and they started again. We need community. Right after that Dyke March announcement came, they organized like 200 people within a week to come to an event, and they had an alternative march, the alternative event. As a gay man, I offered, I brought a rainbow challah as a peace offering to the lesbians. I offered it. I was like, let's be friends. I think there's a funny history between gay men and lesbians. So I come in peace. And it's wonderful to find community and with each other. So
it is beautiful. And I will ask you, my one ask will be that I love the station idea.
Yeah.
But everyone should pass through the station of like, what next? Like the activism station.
Absolutely.
Like make everyone like take whatever you experience now and commit to one thing. And it doesn't have to be, you know, marching in the street, although I want every Jewish American in the streets right now. But it could be like writing to your representative, posting on social media, you know, creating your own content, putting stickers, whatever it is, to show that we are Jewish in public and we're not going anywhere.
Yeah. I mean, similarly, right, out of this whole conversation, what can gay Jews or gay non-Jews, excuse me, even more importantly, gay non-Jews, what can they do? What can people do? When you hear anti-Semitism, call it out. Just call it out. When you hear the word genocide, tell people how infactual that is. Tell them how wrong it is. When you see graffiti in a bathroom that says death to Israel or glory, cross it off. Like, we need people to help us out right now in all spaces. And I wish, like you said, I wish that gay people would not be so quiet and so silent all the time.
No, I love that. And I think that's a great comment for every non-Jewish person listening and watching, gay or non-gay. Like, if you see a sign that glorifies hate or that vilifies Jews, vilifies Israelis, vilifies Zionists, which we know is code for Jew,
right,
you have the power to make the next person who sees that sign safer by crossing it out. So if you want to do something for your Jewish friends, or if you don't have your Jewish neighbors, your Jewish business owners in the community, put your own sticker on that, you know, right, change that into something positive for the next person.
Absolutely. Absolutely. A small thing, something. Just don't stand for it. Because we're suffering. Jewish people are suffering because of it.
Before we end, I want to ask you about one criticism, I would say, that Jewish Zionist gay men and lesbians, bi, trans, queer receive, which is, you're just pinkwashing. You are just pinkwashing atrocities. And for people who don't know what pinkwashing is, it's basically the idea, and it was created, I only recently learned through Daniel Ryan Spalding's amazing advocacy, that pinkwashing was created to refute the Jewish gay identity. What's your reaction when someone calls you a pinkwasher, or what you do is pinkwashing?
Sure. I mean, it's another tool to delegitimize Israel, but I always think, like, holding Israel to purity tests that your own country cannot amount to is anti-Semitism, if you think about it. Like, you are holding one country to a standard that your own country cannot. You know, I think gay men were allowed to serve in the army 17 years before Don't Ask, Don't Tell was repealed. Homosexuality was decriminalized
decades
before the state of Texas. Like, you're purposely holding up problems to a country to amplify it. But I always say the truth is not propaganda. The truth is just truth. It's just the truth. And so, you know, someone commented once about, you know, how Israel saved this Druze man, you know, they rescued him, their freedom, like it was a PR stunt. And I was like, yeah, that's a PR stunt. And the Muslim Supreme Court justice is also a PR stunt. And the Arab political party is also a PR stunt. And the gay democracy in Israel is also a PR stunt. Like,
you know what?
Listen to yourself.
Also, you know what? If you're going to engage in PR, I'd rather you save, you know, a Palestinian gay man than wear a GoPro and murder. Like,
sure.
Like as far as PR goes, that's the kind of PR we need in the world.
Yeah. Pinkwashing is so, it's such a lazy, so much of the criticism and hate of Israel is so lazy. Like, literally, like, Google so many of the things you're right. Like, just Google it. And the thing about it too is there's so many lies. Like, wait, what is, could that, and I'm Googling now if, like, I mean, I'm Googling the worst things Israel could have, like, I cannot believe they're making me Google this in the way that, like, well, I don't want to get into the presidential debate, because that's a whole other thing. And I don't want Jews to turn on other Jews too. We have to stay focused right now. I think it's more important right now. But like, just Google the stuff. It's there. It's there. And yeah. And when you criticize a country for something, again, that your own country cannot achieve or attain, think about what you're doing.
No, you're absolutely right. I think like Israel shouldn't have Hasbara. All it should have is like three words. Just Google it.
Just, oh my God.
Imagine, yes. Imagine that that would be our response. It's like genocide. Just Google it. You know, ethnic cleansing. Just Google it. Apartheid. Just Google
but
it.
But because it's the internet now, you will find something. You'll find it.
That's the problem. As a psychologist, yeah. I'm super aware of the confirmation bias, which is, yes, people will Google it and they will skip over all the legitimate website, right. The newspapers, right. But they will find the one, you know, crazy Al Jazeera Qatari funded article that says, see, that's exactly what I said.
Or the debate this past week when the moderator said, you know, 40,000 Palestinians have died. And I was like, how many of them are combatants? How many of them are actually, right, when Hamas actually agreed that, 10,000 of them they couldn't find. Like, legitimate news people,
yeah.
they parrot certain things, and it is so frustrating to listen to over and over and over again. Yeah. So, yeah.
All right, so let's bring some positivity.
Yes.
I like to finish every episode with what I've been calling the Jewish lightning round. It's a series of questions. There's no right or wrong answer.
Ooh, this is
just give me the first thing that comes to mind.
Okay.
You get one pass, and I get to decide whether you get that pass.
Okay.
Roni.
Yeah.
What is one thing people don't know about you?
One thing people don't know about me. You have to be a very good friend, but I mean, I love music. I make music playlists every single month. I've made a music playlist every single month since 2014.
Whoa.
Maybe that? Every single, yeah.
What's your favorite, this is not a question on this list, but what's your favorite like Israeli musician?
Ofra Nisim is incredible. Dancing, you know Ofra? Yeah. Ofra? Yeah, of course. I mean, Ofra is incredible. Eden Golan is incredible now. I'm obsessed with her. Yeah, I would say that. And then, of course, Noah. Noah Kirel is incredible, too.
I love it.
Yeah.
You're very up to date on your music. what is one thing people don't know about the Jews?
One thing that people don't know about the Jews. One thing that people don't know about Jews. Oh, God. They know a lot of negative things and probably stereotypes about Jews.
Mm. It could also be one thing that Jews don't know about the Jews.
Mm. I was going to say our resilience and our strength in community, but that's something actually that I think we're rediscovering. And what Herzl said, we have to, it is tragedy that brings us back together and unites us again. And I think Albert Einstein, who said like, we always need a dose of anti-Semitism to like wake us up again. So it's happening. It's happening again.
What is your favorite curse?
My favorite curse? I don't like cursing or violence, to be very clear. I'm not a big curser.
But like you walked into that bathroom stall and it said glory to the martyrs.
Sure. Like, honestly, this isn't really a curse, and I wish I had a better word. It's stupid. And I can't think of a better, you are being stupid, and I wish I had a better word than that. But when you can Google it, when you can look something up, I mean, stupidity is a very base childish word, but it's very apropos for many people right now. And I just Google it or just, yeah.
When was the last time you cried?
Honestly, like preparing for today, when I was thinking about what I might say, ever since the hostages were killed last week,
yeah,
executed, my emotions have been here. When I think about the horror that we've been through this year and I like we're still going through. Yeah. I've been crying. Yeah. Yeah.
If you could have any person over for Shabbat dinner from any moment in history, who would that be?
Oh, Theodor Herzl. Yes. I brought his book. Like, tell us, man. What was it like?
I'm sure he's a hoot. Yeah.
Yes. And he's a playwright too. So the fact that like I would love to like have a conversation with him about that, that'd be great. Yeah.
I wouldn't give him cottage cheese or something. He would get in the beer.
His beer, that's right.
What's your favorite Jewish holiday?
My favorite Jewish holiday is... These are very good questions. Right now, I would say it's Hanukkah. I mean, it changes. The whole purpose of Hanukkah is Jewish pride. Why do we put a menorah by the window? The whole point is to publicize the miracle. And I think we're, again, imena nili mili. Like, we're in the place where, like, we have to put the menorah by the window right now. And I think when I teach my students right now, it's a very important holiday that I teach them about.
What's your least favorite Jewish holiday?
I mean, everyone's going to say Yom Kippur. You're in shul for so long and you're hungry.
When do you feel safest?
When I'm with my friends, when I'm with community.
When do you feel least safe?
When I'm not with my friends and when I'm not with community, for sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What gives you hope?
Again, it's community. It's. I can't do any of, none of us can do anything. This Queer Zionist Congress, you know, dream of mine right now, I can't do it without the excitement of other people, without the help of other people right now. The community, the gay Zionists, we can't do anything without each other. And it constantly, that we are in this world together and we need to hold on very tight right now.
What's the first thing that comes to mind when you think of the words Jewish civil rights?
Jewish civil rights. The first thing that comes to mind is double standards right now. Is double standards. It is treating Jewish people one way that you would never treat any other minority in any other way.
Yeah. Finally, every episode, I urge the listeners to donate to one charity that does good in Israel or across the Jewish diaspora. Where would you want people to donate to this week?
Sure. Great question. My mom actually started a nonprofit that helps victims of terror. She started it 20 years ago after the Second Intifada. It's called Operation Embrace. I went to Israel in November with her. We visited the kibbutzim, went to Be'eri. We went to some of the displaced communities. She donated a summer program for kids in Sderot this summer. She's been helping. I mean, it's my mom, and she's done incredible work. Like, just her and like a few people who help her. She's been in Sderot for over a decade with a social worker that they have to, you know, help people there. So absolutely donate to Operation Embrace. She's doing incredible work.
This is incredible. Just the fact that you and I met on the street, we started talking, you're organizing. Then I find out that your mom is doing this. And I wouldn't have known if I hadn't asked this question.
I'm actually really happy you did. Thank you.
The world, like how each and every one, I don't know which camera to look at, each and every one of us can do something.
Absolutely.
And it's just so incredible.
Yeah. We are here together. We need to be together in this. The I help you, you help me. We're in a,
Roni, where can people find you?
Sure. Roniel, R-O-N-I-E-L, at queerzionistcongress.com is the email. On Instagram, they can find me. I created Instagram accounts for Queer Zionist Congress, Gay Zionist, but my personal one is Without Me, It's Macca.
Without Me, It's Macca.
Without Me, It's Macca. Because of macaroni. So Without Me, It's Macca. That's right. Yeah.
I love it. How can people join the Gay Zionist WhatsApp group?
Yeah, great question. Go to the Instagram, follow the Instagram, direct message me. If you want to get involved with the Queer Zionist Congress, email me, Roniel at queerzionistcongress.com. It's an exciting venture that I can't wait to create. I need help right now. We need the people. I'm in talk already with the consulate and some other individuals in Israel. And so, we're going to do this together.
Roni, I'm straight. You're gay. I am here for you in everything that you need. And I feel like you're here for me with anything that I need, because we're all united by our humanity, by our Jewishness, by our Zionism. I am so, so thankful that I ran into you, and even more thankful that, and I said, you want to come on my podcast, instead of being like, oh, what the fuck? What are you talking about? You were like, yeah, let's do this. So I'm so glad to say this. So here I am with Roni Tesler. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Michael Greenspan, Shai's father-in-law. I'd like to thank you for listening to the Here I Am podcast with Shai Davidai. Here I Am is recorded at The Cave Production House in Hackensack, New Jersey, and is brought to you in partnership with Abby Sophia and Adamit Productions. You can find us on Instagram, YouTube, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts. I'd also like to extend my deepest gratitude to everyone at Adamit Productions for turning Shai's dream into a reality, and to all our donors and partners for their unwavering commitment to fighting for Jewish civil rights. Most importantly, I'd like to thank you, our listeners. Let's be honest, none of this would have been possible without your support and dedication. Showing up is half the battle. Thank you for showing up. Thank you for being there. Thank you for saying, "Here I am."